2021 episode of the Forever Bristol City podcast. Joining me today are the usual suspects, Dave Favs, Ian, Mark, and myself, Headhunter, or David, whichever way you want to cut it. Well, here we are. We're celebrating victory in City's first game of the new year. The final score at Ashton Gate in the FA Cup third round was Bristol City 2, Portsmouth 1. And before we talk about the game, news came through during the game, actually, that one of my old favourites, I'm sure Ian and Mark, maybe not so much Dave Favs, because he's a bit younger than the rest of us, but one of our old favourites sadly passed away today at the age of 77. Not a big age, but that was Bobby Kellar. But we'll talk about him later. And it's ironic, actually, that it's 48 years ago this weekend, or this stage of the FA Cup competition, that we played Portsmouth, and Bobby Kellar was playing for Portsmouth at that time, his second spell with a club, and Bobby Gould got an equaliser down at Pompey. I was there. We maybe talk about that later. And then we won the replay. In the days of replays, we won that 4-1 at Ashton Gate. But we won today. We're in the fourth round. A win is a win, whichever way you want to look at it. Let's go first to Dave. The quick recap of your initial thoughts on this afternoon's game.
I think for me, it was a game that was won by two really good goals from Bristol City. There was some all right stuff throughout the game, but too many spells where we just give the ball away and we let teams control us. And we shouldn't be letting a team from League One have any spells of pressure like they did second half, where we looked like we couldn't get the ball away. You know, we've got to find ways of overcoming those hurdles and being able to not have to soak up so much pressure, which inevitably leads to shots. But I'm pleased that we won. I'm pleased we're in the round the hat for rounds 4 and 5, I believe, because they do both draws in one. And hopefully it'll just give us a bit of confidence going into the coming games. But plenty of work to do, I'd say.
Mark, your thoughts on the game? Just a quick synopsis, not the action, but overall, you know, 30-second summary of what we've seen this afternoon.
Well, for the viewers, a great FA Cup tie end-to-end where Portsmouth played very well, showed why they're top of the league. City's soft centre, again, let them down. But as Dave said, two fantastic strikes saw us into the third round. And that's probably as good as it gets. But the old problems remain.
You there, Dave?
He's so shocked that I kept it short. That's why, Dave.
Okay, Ian, your thoughts before we dissect the action and the starting lineup?
Yeah, my thoughts. I think if you look at the pluses, Mawson returning was a tremendous plus. He looked like a leader. We're through to the next round and in the hat for the fourth and fifth round draw. And it's a home win. And they've been difficult. In coming, we also
Ian,
had a
Your thoughts on the game?
Ian's on, Dave. I don't know whether you've lost us. Carry on, Ian.
Yeah, I think if you look at the team, we had a glimpse of Zach Viner as a holding midfield player, and he came on, and what a difference it makes when you've got a player in there who can actually win the ball and tackle. Because our three other central midfielders can't win the ball and can't tackle. And I'm calling the three of them out for that. Masengo is probably the hardest tackler of all of them and the best defensively of all of them. And he's not great at defending or attacking. And that's the trouble is that with all three of them, they're not great at defending or attacking.
So that was it. That was it really then. So let's look at the starting lineup, Dave. What's on the 11?
You there, Dave?
Yeah, I'll take over from Dave because I think he may be able to hear us, but we can't hear him. Dave Favs, what's your take on what Dean should do for the Brentford game on Wednesday? What shape of team would you like to see? Because
are we not going to talk about the game first?
Yeah, let's talk about the game. Sorry, I'm back in a room now. Let's talk about the Let's talk about the game. Dave, the starting lineup. What were your thoughts on that? Was it predictable that he brought back Adelakan, and was surprised to see Mawson out there, wasn't it?
I thought there was a chance that Mawson might play from what was said in midweek. I guess as soon as if he wants to play a 4-4-2, then I don't think that team was a surprise at all. I think the big question for me will be, does he stick with 4-4-2 against Brentford, or are we going to see this return of swapping systems and players every couple of games like we saw over the last 8, 10, 12 games? If he wants to stick with 4-4-2 for the rest of the season, that's fine. So I don't worry about it. But pick a system, stick to it, get your players playing right. So from the options he had today, if he's going to play that system, I think I'd have been pretty close to that side if I was naming it today. I was quite pleased to see us play two big uns up front as well. And I thought that was quite interesting to see, and maybe try and fight them. It's interesting, before the games, a lot of talk about Portsmouth being very direct. And I think, for the centre-backs, they played up to the front man a lot. But they played just as much football, if not more football than us. So I was quite surprised pre-game that there was all this talk of that, because that's not what I'd seen from this season. Not with players like Ryan Williams and Cannon in midfield as well. I was really impressed with today.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. They look very comfortable on the ball. And the commentator, maybe we'll talk about him yesterday, later, maybe, with his pronunciations were pretty awful. But he said a couple of times, that you couldn't see that City were the championship team. But let's look at we go into the action. I mean, City, I thought they started the game okay, to be fair. And Ian, the first goal... it was well worked. Backinson to Diju, quick exchange of passes with Adelakan. Classic finish from our key striker, who looks like he probably could be leaving to Middlesbrough. The fact that they got knocked out of the cup, no issues of being cup tied. But your thoughts on the goal and Diju's performance overall?
Well, I think the Middlesbrough thing looks to me like people putting two and two together and coming up with six, because Diju's out of contract. And also the big lad they've got up front, who we've been linked with probably seven or eight times and never been managed to sign, Assombe Longa. People are talking about a swap deal, or that Zizou may go there. I think it's more likely that nothing will happen at all. Zizou will stay with us, and he'll walk away as he's wanted to for the last year. He'll walk away in the summer for nothing, along with a few other players. Yeah. But I think when I saw the side today, I thought the problem for me is where does the creativity and how does it come from, and how do the wide players get the ball? I mean, even with the fact that we've got the non-tackling midfield, we had 55% possession today.
Yeah.
But it's what we do with it. It's no good giving the ball to Adelakan with his back to goal, with two defenders on him, because all he can do is try and beat them and lose it, or pass it back, and that was happening far too often. Backwards, sideways, backwards. I mean, that's okay if you're 2-0 up and you're trying to play out the last 5 minutes. You play like that all night, but not as a pattern of play.
But the goal, Ian, was a good. It was a good strike, wasn't it? It was a good strike.
It was an excellent strike. And it's the type of thing that Backinson, when he played the 1-2, it's the type of thing that Backinson should do more. And Pham, once again,
it was
gets
that
ball. Was that... I thought it was Backinson. Anyway, if you say it was Adelakan...
It was Adelakan. It was the only thing he did in the game.
Yeah, well, he put over a nice left-wing cross that Backinson missed, didn't he, when he made a rare excursion into the box. Yeah. So, I good strike from Pham, but in the end, we had a 5.2 million and a £5 million striker out there, and possibly that's what made the difference. Although Wells on the right wing, to me, or Wells playing wide is a joke. Either play him in his proper position,
or don't play him
down the middle, yeah. or don't bother.
Mark, the first half, City were in control, I think, without looking really threatening. But then the goal that put Pompey level right on the stroke of half-time, well, it was in... been tied on. The referee stopped play for an injury in their box. It wasn't a head injury, stopped play. He awarded them a goal kick when surely it should have been a drop ball, or Pompey played it back to us. And they went up the other end and scored. I mean, take us through that refereeing decision and that goal, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, the cross came, I think it was a row corner. And Mawson was behind Zizou, and Zizou just went into the side of Rasmus Nikolaisen, who Semenya was turning inside out. He was giving him real problems, and he conceded a yellow card for a free kick on the edge of the area that we wasted. Two of those in the first half. So went down the other end, and I think Brown got the ball from Harness through Nagy and Backinson. They were just so soft on the right of, in the right of our penalty area. Plenty of men behind the ball. Then Brown got behind Callas. It was played back across the box to Callum Johnson. And he had Adelaka. And Adelaka just turned his back on Johnson. And he just scuffed it into the far corner past an unsighted Bentley. I mean, no commitment there from Adelaka. Three or four mistakes in the whole thing. Bentley had no chance because it just went in the opposite corner. It was a good finish, but an awful bit of defending by City.
Awful goal to concede. Dave, did you see that goal? I mean, the build-up to it, strange decision by the referee, wasn't it? The way they were able to retain possession. But your thoughts on that and the goal itself?
Yeah, he lost the plot, the referee, because it wasn't a foul. The game carried on, and he then called the ball back. Should have been a drop ball. They should have given the ball back to us, and we should have saw out the half. And as it happened, we then get another famous Bristol City leg dangle tackle from Nagy on the edge of the box. I appreciate he's on a yellow card, but you can tackle without fear of getting sent off, can't you? And ultimately, the guy goes through, slips the ball in. I don't blame Adelaken. I think Adelaken's got himself into a reasonable position back in the box for a ball squared across the 6-yard box. Whether he's turned on it, all players turn on it when someone slams a ball at them. And it was a pretty cool finish actually from the guy. But we should have been going in at halftime 1-0 up, probably just about deserving it. And as it happened, we kind of went in 1-1.
Yeah, the second half was sort of one-way traffic, particularly after the double substitution. I mean, the only chance I've got for City was on the hour when Rowe put in a cross and Semenyo got his shot away and it was saved. Not a bad effort. I think, you know, you've got to persevere with him because I think he will come good, Semenyo. But then when we made the double substitution, which was more coming on for Mawson, who certainly looked like, you know, he hadn't been away for, he slotted in perfectly on that left side, and then Adelaken went off, Naki Wells came on. But I've got three incidents here: 69, 71 and 80 minutes, good pressure, a flowing passing, Naylor's shot saved by Bentley, another match saving saved by Bentley, Jacob's shot saved by Bentley, and then a Taylor Moore tackle robbing Harrison. I mean, Ian, after those two substitutions that were made, it was obvious Mawson was only going to get an hour, sensible thing to do with him, but we went to pieces really, and Portsmouth looked the more likely team to score, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And Portsmouth, let's be honest, looked the better team, and I agree with Dave, they played the better football. The referee, Lee Doughty, is a dreadful referee. Someone's put here, it could have been Dave Fez, I said
it was
Barnsley and Rotherham. And I thought he is a dreadful referee. I mean, booking Nagy for what he did after 4 minutes, I thought was very harsh. And like we said after that, he's on a tightrope. But he tackles like that or doesn't tackle like that all the time.
He does, yeah, you're right.
But if I'd have been going down, if I was a Pompey fan, I'd gone to that game and I'd have been driving back to Portsmouth, I'd have felt absolutely cheated that we didn't at least get to extra time, notwithstanding the fact that City scored two fantastic goals. And it's nice to see a score from outside the box, because that's something else we don't do very often.
No, that's true. That's very true. I mean, Mark, the goal that proved decisive, I mean, Zach Viner had come on by then into, looked to me, a midfield role, and he slipped the ball to Chris Martin. Got a lucky bounce as it came off the defender, but he cracked that in, and that was a good finish from Chris, wasn't it?
Yeah, Viner just held the ball up and slipped it wide to Martin, and he sort of played a 1-2 off the shins of the left centre back Sean Raggett, but he curled it into the top right hand corner. It was absolutely fantastic finish, and it was, you know, worthy of winning any match. But Yeah, it was just the way that City faded out in the second half and just completely lost their shape. Mawson going off, I don't think, made any difference. The real problem was in the midfield and the fact that having four strikers on the pitch, it was just a mess again, like it was against Luton. You know, for most of it. And other games we played where we just tried to throw the kitchen sink and against Wickham.
Without any real plan,
because he didn't have any wide players. I think although Adelakin and Semenyo, you think, would be the wide men in a 4-4-2 today, they both played quite narrowly. But Semenyo gave their team a lot of problems today. And Nick Lyerson was lucky to stay on because his second foul that gave away the free kick on the edge of the box, I think for Martin's, for Adelakin's wasted free kick that hit the wall, that he should have been off for that. That was a bookable offence and he'd already had a yellow. So, yeah, just scrape through and, you'll probably go through the rest of the action. Through.
I mean, they weren't finished even after the goal because I had it on 94 minutes on the clock. Hwula, who I think, is it Jordi Hwula? He's ex-Man City youth player who we were interested in, I'll say 4 or 5 years ago. But again, Dan Bentley.
He scored two at Ashton Gate against us for Walsall when he was on loan from Man City in the famous 8-2.
Dan Bentley avoided the boring extra time prospect with another good save right at the death. So, Dave, look, we are where we are. The lone players that have come back, one who was noticeable by his absence was Casey Palmer, or do you think he's got COVID issues? What are your thoughts on what's happened off the field this week on the returning loanee situation, Dave?
Well, I think we've done the right thing with all of them, unless there's anyone I've forgotten. I think Casey Palmer, I don't think there's any reason to doubt he's got COVID. I think he'd have been in the 20-man squad today if he was fit. And I don't think anyone else is going to pick him up other than Swansea in this window. So, and no, in fact, they can't because he's already played for two clubs this season, us and Swansea. So I think we've done the right thing there. I think we've brought Cam Pring back, which is eminently sensible with Jay De Silva potentially out for quite a while, and he'll give Tommy Rowe some competition. And then we've brought back Awura Edwards from Grimsby. Yeah. I thought there was talk that he might go back out on loan somewhere else, and him and Morton coming back was predominantly around the fact that Holloway's gone from Grimsby, and it's a bit of a mess up there. So we'll see what happens with them. The fact... I think Morton was cup tied as well today, wasn't he? I don't think he could make the squad. So we'll see what happens maybe on Wednesday against Brentford. Morton and I don't know if Casey Palmer will have done enough days and got his negative test from that point. So
yeah, what did you think of Mariappa having his contract extended to the end of the season? Good thing.
Yeah, sensible. Yeah. No, Mark Carter's just said on the text here that they said the loan rules have changed and you can go to three clubs this season. So okay, that gives us a little bit of wiggle room throughout the rest of this window, depending if we bring anyone else in. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah. I mean, Ian, you know, we got a bit of a, you know, today was almost like a chance to give some players some minutes, but we got another tough game coming up on Wednesday. I'm surprised they've rearranged it so quickly. I don't know whether there's anything in that due to the controversy over, well, the alleged controversy over the postponement or suspension, I think it was called the other week. But Ian, do you think they'll bring back Cameron Pring in that left-back role, because that's his conventional position, and maybe do a structural change, you know, Tommy Rowe in midfield on the left side, maybe? What do you think looking forward to Brentford? Do you think Casey might be in the bench for that one?
Well, I think if Casey Palmer has is COVID negative or has recovered, if he's actually had it, I think he'd be on the bench. To start with, I would have probably, if you're going to play him, you play him as a 10 behind two strikers. And once again, if you want to play him wide left or anything like that, please don't bother. And then if he's playing that 10 role, don't let him too close to our penalty area because he's another one of those accident waiting to happen defenders. But he's good on the ball. He is creative. And if you're going to play for a 10, play with a 10, it has to be him or Pato. Pato's out for another Well, the club said this week that he'd be out for 4 weeks from the op, but I don't know if that means 4 weeks and he's back available for first team selection, or 4 weeks and he's back one of these vague phrases on the grass.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about injuries and whatnot.
Which seems to mean, you know, he might come back next week or he might not come back for another month. So, I'm not. If I was going out to Brentford, one player I think that another one that was cup tied today was James Morton, and I wouldn't mind seeing James Morton on the left hand side of a middle three in a 3-5-2 because he can pass the ball very accurately. He's got a great left foot at long distance, which once again Masengo, Nagy, and Backinson can. They can pass the ball about 20 yards is about their range, and that's it. So I would definitely consider him. If not, yeah, you could push Tommy Rowe either as a holding midfield player if Zach Viner was playing in the back three, or you could play him on the left-hand side of a three narrow in midfield where he'd give you that little bit more, should we say, second ball winning ability. And he's got a decent left foot and he can score goals and shoot.
Yeah.
So,
maybe you could play with one up front and start Naki Wells with as a one and play a, you know, a 5-4-1.
You couldn't play Naki Wells up front on his own, Dave. He's a midget. He's 5'6". I'm taller than he is.
So you can play one man up front. You could, you know, you can play whatever you want. It's all about playing a system that suits what you've got. He played up front quite a bit on his own at QPR and scored, you know, however many goals he got forward of last season.
Yeah, but you've got to remember, Dave, they play attacking football.
Well, there you go. So
maybe how we should approach Brentford, because if we go to Brentford and try and contain them, even though I didn't think they looked great against Tottenham, it was Tottenham they were playing, they were all over it. Mark, let me come to you next. One player that we're in the transfer window now, we're talking more about players coming back or players who might leave, i.e. Pham, but it was widely reported in the Sunday papers that Connor Wickham has been linked with us and other clubs. He's out of contract, I think, is at Palace in the summer. Would he be a good signing, or would he be another player with an injury record that you might get 3 games out of him, then we'd be lumbered with his wages for the rest of the season if he broke down? Do you think that would be a good signing? I don't think so. But what do you think, Mark?
Well, he'd fit right in here, wouldn't he, with his injury record? I mean, not fair to Connor Wickham, but yeah, his injury record's not very good. I thought I read an update on the forum that Palace might be loath to let him go because they've got so many injured players at the moment. They're finding it difficult to get a team together. But he's not a bad striker at this level. I think he scored for Sheffield Wednesday down here a couple of seasons ago. But getting a run of games out of him, I think, is very difficult. You'd have to wrap him up in cotton wool. I think the only worry we've got is if Pham goes, is it paper talk that Middlesbrough are interested? We'd have to replace him. We've got no choice. I mean, going back to the Brentford game now, I think one of the bonuses we're going to have on Wednesday is that Josh De Silva isn't playing because he'll have a free match ban as a result of his awful foul on who was it?
In midweek.
It was Højbjerg, wasn't it?
Is it?
He took Højbjerg out with a two-footed tack, with a two-footed lunge last Tuesday in the semi-final. So yeah, he's out. But we really need some steel in midfield. Otherwise, they'll just run through us. They're in their midfield, but they'll be all over us pressing. And, you know, with the likes of Rico Henry pushing up on the left as well, looking to get crosses in. They're very good attacking side, but they are mean in midfield as well, with the likes of Christian Dalsgaard. So, but why not play with two big strikers up front in Martin and Zizou again, and just hit those balls and let them give their centre-backs, you know, let them give their centre-backs something to think about.
Tottenham exploited the Brentford centre-backs. But, Dave, I mean, yeah, just before we go on to some of the other topics, obviously being hot news this week, I mean, how would you know how Brentford play. We all know how Brentford play. You know, they're good to watch, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, what would you do Wednesday different to what you've done today? Or do you think that's a bit of a big ask, asking Holden to do something different?
I don't think, of late, I don't think it is a big ask to ask him to do something different. I think that's all he's done of late is chop and change, which was one of the things that I really like that he didn't do early on in the season when he stuck with his 3-5-2. I think if you try and match Brentford up on Wednesday night, they're better than us. So no point going 4-3-3 because effectively just give them the advantage because they're used to playing their system. I think as Mark was saying there, I don't mind if we play a little bit more direct, but the rest of the team has got to play this all together that way. So there's no point banging the ball up from, you know, Mawson or Callis up into Zizou and Martin if you haven't got players around them. So if you've got 50 yards between them because you've allowed the game to get stretched by Brentford, then any loose ball will just get picked up with them and you're under the cosh again. And that's a little bit what happened second half today after about the hour mark where we kind of lost control. I thought actually start of the second half, we looked like we had good kind of possession in their half, but we wasted so many passes. Yeah. The number of times that Nard hit a
that's a lot of loose balls. And I think there was one situation in that good spell that that Pompey had where it was almost three against two when they broke down the left. And I think the broke just hung on to the ball too long. And we just shouldn't be allowing that. We shouldn't be allowing that to happen. Now, today, you know, there's been a couple of shots in the FA Cup today. At least we weren't one of them. Now, I mean, one of the big topics this week and the fact that Gregor went to print on it was the alleged comment to a media outlet from Joe Williams that he has not been happy with his rehab. And allegedly another player endorsed that view. Gregor went to print on that. Ian, we've been saying something's not right for months, yeah? And we've been sort of naming names as saying, you know, they got a track record. And this week it all blew up that everybody was going back 7 years to certain people's track records when they're at West Ham and Arsenal. I mean, Gregor's gone to print on it, Ian. That means there's no smoke. He's not going to, you know, jeopardise his relationship with a club, or maybe he has, by printing something as explosive as that. What was your thoughts when you read that coming from him, that he pretty much underwrote the story that was in The Athletic, I think it was? What do you think?
Well, what he said was he checked with The Athletic with regard to their sources, and he was satisfied that the story was genuine or the source was good. Now, so just contradict you a little bit. I haven't mentioned anybody's name or whose fault it is. That the point I've been making is we've got a horrendous amount of injuries, and no other club, as far as I'm aware, in the Sky Bet Championship has had anything like it. Mm. And now we've all had the COVID situation is global. It's certainly nationwide, and the no pre-season is also nationwide. So if every other club had 10 or 11 players injured, and that's where we were before Brunt left, so it now takes us down to 10, we've now got five that I think are out for the season.
Who are? Well,
Vyman.
Vyman.
Vyman, De Silva, Williams, Watkins, and O'Dowda. I don't think you'll see any of them this season. If you do see them, it'll be very late. I mean, and when I say very late, I'm talking May. Mm. Now, that's five. I've got... now, there are other players who are currently injured that would make a difference. You saw the difference Mawson made today. Imagine if Baker was available to play against Brentford. We wouldn't be conceding some of the goals from crosses that we were if Big Baker was playing. I'll tell you that now. Now, okay, people will say, well, okay, how many games is he going to be fit for then? And that's another question. But we need Baker. Walsh will improve us from a creative perspective, but he's not going to improve us defensively.
No.
I think we need to look and see, well, okay, what do we need to do in this window if we can? And that will probably be loans unless someone goes out. The big tester is if someone comes in and makes a take it or leave it offer for FAM. Do we say no, we're going to go through to the end of the season because that's not enough, we want our money back, we try and get him to sign another contract? Or do we say, well, okay, you know, 2 million's better than no million, or even a million's better than no million. Do we let him go? In which case, we need a replacement. And on Connor Wickham, I've got to be honest, I saw Connor Wickham cause massive problems to us when he was a 17-year-old. And I think he was playing for Ipswich at the time, down at Ashton Gate.
He's a good player, Ian.
But he's a really good player. But talk about, you know, he's a good player when he's fit. And the poor kid never is. I don't know what the problem is, but he's never available. And
Matthews.
If you really want him, you probably pick him up for nothing on reasonable wages, pay as you play in the summer. But I'd be disappointed if Pham went out and he came in. Not forgetting, of course, that Pham's been carrying an injury. So hopefully, I hope he's recovered from that now, and he started today. So one would hope so.
Well, if Pham plays like he played today, and you know when he's come on as a sub between now and the end of the season, he runs his contract down. That's just a fact of life. It is what it is. Because if we don't replace him, then you know you've got to question where the goals are going to come from. Yeah, because he has been pretty reliable in that respect. Mark, I mean, what were your thoughts? Because this business of the player injuries and what have you, it fueled a whole big debate about the influence that Mark Ashton seems to be having on the club. And as we say, there's somebody, I think, Dave, you've put on here, it's all, everything's conjecture. It's all circumstantial, this bit about injuries. But Mark, you know, when things are going badly, people look for a scapegoat, don't they? And Ashton was starting to get all eyes on him just a little bit. And this win today has probably deferred it until the next defeat or we re-enter the top six. But what are your thoughts, Ian, on the, sorry, not Ian, Mark, on the, you know, the, you know, it was almost a storm brewing through the week, you know, to do with the injuries and these stories and what have you. What did you think from afar?
Well, any story like that, a middle of the road paper, like a local paper, like the Post is going to make, they are going to confirm that their sources are gonna, because of the relationship that they have with the club. They're going to have to make sure that that's a stone wall source before they report it. So it's a bit of a worry. I mean, you've got to go back and look at what happened with Steve Brooker, who was also a fantastic player but suffered a lot of injuries after he left. Of course, he was in dispute with the club about the way that he had misdiagnosis of certain injuries, which caused them a huge amount of problems.
Who was that again? Sorry, I missed that. Was that Gary O'Neill?
Steve Brooker, wasn't it? Yeah, Steve Brooker.
But that goes back 10 years. That's such a long time ago that it's not really current. And thank you, Mark Carter, who's put the SMS on there when I said re-enter the top six. And I think he's put about 30 laugh till he cried emojis down there, what have you. But there we go. Dave, I mean, you've put a comment on there. Mark Ashton being awfully quiet. Bearing in mind we're a third of the way into the window, speaks volumes for me, for you. What are your thoughts on this? The overall picture, you know, people have been saying like Lansdowne's interested just in the rugby, and quite right too when you look at what Bristol have done. I watched a bit of that yesterday. Rugby's never for me, but Lansdowne's there, Junior Lansdowne, you know, does he carry any influence? People say that he's in tune with the fans, and you know, people, I know any fan commenting on the forums is always seen as they don't reflect the views of the minority, but do you think it's right that any spotlight should go towards Ashton rather than Holden? How do you view what's happened off the field over the last 7 days?
Yeah, I think there's enough criticism from forums, from ourselves and, you know, countless other people on social media about the way the team's performed. We know they've had injuries. It's not an excuse. You know, for 8, 10, 12 games, we've not been good enough, in my opinion, and been quite poor in a lot of those games as well. Early season, as you know, I was quite positive. I know people didn't think there was much difference then. I think there was, but let's not go over that. But we're talking about off-the-pitch stuff now. And I think it's been pretty clear from Dean Holden. Dean doesn't see his remit to talk about contracts. And yet we've not heard from Mark Ashton. I put on the text just now, we're a third of the way into the window. We normally get to hear from Mark Ashton pretty early in the window about, you know, where we are as a club, what we're trying to do. we've heard nothing, have we? You know, we haven't even heard him say much about, you know, players coming back from loan or anything like that. You know, he normally likes to get a little bit of profile around some of this stuff about, you know, how it's been, you know, marvellous Bristol City type stuff. And we've heard nothing. And I think the big one for me is from Arajizu. You know, ultimately, he might sign a contract. If he does, fair enough. But if we let him walk out the door, that's 5.3 million, our record signing at the time, we've allowed to leave on a free. And he could do that by signing a pre-contract with another club outside of England. And he could quite easily do that. We, you know, he's had interest in the past from Turkey and France. And I think that'd be a pretty damning statement on Mark Ashton's time as our CEO to allow a player of that ilk that he couldn't tie down to a contract or he couldn't sell.
Now, you did a very in-depth analysis. And for those of you that didn't read it, find it somewhere on there, or maybe Dave put it on Twitter because it was in-depth. And I think it was in-depth and damning that it's, you know, you look at certain aspects of it and it's a bit like the Emperor's New Clothes. You know, it looks, bits of it look good, but people have gone back because Ashton had his fingers in the pie, for want of a better description, as far back as the Derek McInnes period. But for those that haven't read it, you know, in a snapshot, what were your findings on that in-depth analysis that you did? That, you know,
I think for supposedly as a, you know, top-class recruitment team, I think they failed pretty miserably. And I think they've benefited from previous recruitment regimes. And in the piece that I wrote, I put a lot of stock down to, firstly, Sean O'Driscoll with Keith Burt and then Steve Cottrell with Keith Burt. And I'd say there's probably been two to four really good signings that have come under the Ashton regime. And that's not putting everything at Mark Ashton, because I think Lee Johnson plays a big part in some of that as well. But I think I named Webster and Brownhill as our two, what I would say, unqualified successes. Everyone else, you can look at it and say, yeah, you could argue. And there's lots that have been massive failures within that as well.
And the total number of signings is over the period, 68. I mean, some clubs have probably done that and some might have done it before. But overall, would you say we're in the top six in terms of volume of transfers? That's the one top six we have got into, the top six in terms of volume of players.
Yeah, some clubs have a lot of volume as well. We're probably in the top 8, 10, I would have thought, you know, and we might be even higher than that. But I think, you know, it's so scattergun. You know, we tried the German experiment for one window, didn't we, when we brought in Hegeler and Giefer, and that didn't work. Then we tried, a bit of something else. And I think, you know, Ian and myself were probably lined up on this. Is one, I want to know, what is our recruitment strategy? And also, more importantly, at this point in time, what is our contract strategy as well?
Well, that's another can of worms. I got my views on that. I mean, Ian, before we talk about contracts, you know, you did it for me back in the summer. Well, not did it for me, sent me a list of your views on transfers in and out. I don't know whether you've read Dave's piece, but do you think Ashton's under any pressure? And I think we posed a question on the last podcast, you know, will one of or both Mark Ashton and Dean Holden be here in October next year? Yeah.
Well, to answer the questions, number one, is he under pressure? Yes. And if he isn't, he should be. Mm-hmm. The other person I'd say is under pressure to show his hand to a point is Stephen Lansdowne. At the end of the day, Steve's the guy that signs off the budget, not Mark Ashton. And if there's a major out or a major in, the final say is Steve Lansdowne. It's definitely not Mark Ashton. And if you say, well, how do you know? He told me that.
Yep.
And he told me that in front of a lot of other people as well. So I'm not saying that he's got no say in it. What I'm saying is, if Steve Lansdowne says, we're not doing that deal, then that's it.
It doesn't happen.
It's the same situation with contracts. And you mentioned FAM, but you've also got some other expensive signings. Baker.
Four and a half, wasn't it?
Four and a half million. But I think we got a deal where when they took over Villa, they were the new owners wanted money desperately. So I think we finished up getting him for 3.5 or something like that. You know,
or did they maybe...
That kind of ballpark, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's the type of thing. So
still 3.5 million player. It's 3.5 million quid that we paid for a player
Hang on, Dave. You got... So those two... The point I'm making, you got two players that... Okay, let's call it 5.3 and 4.5. That's 10 million quid. That's just those two. On top of that, you've got Rowe cost us nothing. Patterson, who cost us about 1.6.
Vyman, 2.5.
Jack Hunt cost us 1.6, 1.8. Vyman's got an option. In other words, we can sign him for another year on his current deal. I'm not worried about Marley Watkins, who we should have never signed, Rennie Gilmartin, or Adelakun, who we spent, another player we should never sign for 600,000. I'm not bothered about those. But players who are in our first 11, I am concerned about. Now, let me just say, I don't mind if we sell every single one of them, but the emphasis is on the word sell, not give away. You can't give away 14, 15 million quid worth of stuff unless the club's going to come out and say, right, we're done with spending money. That's it. We're absolutely done with it. We're going to play younger players. We're going to bring them through. We might sign a couple of blokes from League One, but or we might have a few people on loan. That's it. We're not doing it anymore. Then fine. Absolutely fine. At least we know the strategy.
It's communicating. You're absolutely right, Ian. It's communicating a strategy. It's a pattern of play. It's a way of playing. Yeah. And I think, I mean, Mark.
It's the job of the CEO, isn't it?
Well, absolutely the job of the CEO, but that's not going to – I don't see that changing anytime soon. I mean, Mark, I might have said this in the podcast a couple of weeks ago, but part of the problem why fans feel disillusionment is that we – Ashton Gate always used to be a fortress and we weren't always great on the road, but you used to be entertained at Ashton Gate, certainly in the Danny Wilson years, and I know that's League One, but if your home form's good, we've only won – 27 of the last 69 home matches. That's since we lost to Wolves that day, which is now, 3 years ago. Mark, the general malaise that's about the place, and again, the performance today is not going to alleviate it. I know we're in the fourth round, but, you know, you've been a City fan a long time and you talk to people, and it's sort of people our age that can remember the good times in those Premiership years. It is depressing at the moment, and we don't want to be depressed, but at least let's have... We haven't even got the five pillars policy anymore, have we? Or any of this stuff. It's just... There's no communication coming from the club on any aspect of it, is there? You know, post-COVID or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, the five pillars thing, that was only like a five-minute wonder when Sean O'Driscoll was there and it was soon binned. When Steve Cotter was brought in and he said, look, I need it. I'll take the job as long as you give me X, Y and Z and I'll do it my way. And it worked. And then the following summer, he bought the cream of League One talent. Yeah, we've got no identity as a team at all in terms of...
Did they throw the five pillars in the bin though, Mark? Were the five pillars thrown in the bin just because Cotterill came in? I think we adhered to a lot of it.
O'Driscoll was told that he had, I mean, he brought in a load of young players and they took 11 games to win their first game, I think, away at Carlisle in that season of 13-14. We just really struggled and we were down the wrong end of the division, and I think a draw against Orient did it for O'Driscoll, although people say he was completely the wrong man. His post-match interviews were awful to listen to. But coming up to current side, we're oversold again. We're being told that when Johnson was sacked, we want somebody to take it. We want somebody who's going to take the club to the next level. Then 6 weeks later, we appoint the assistant manager. It's just a complete mess. And then, of course, John Lansdowne, again, he's a good human. Somebody's holding a gun to my head, it feels like, you know, when I have to say these words. So I've got to think the first thing that comes into my head, and he said that. It's just a complete mess. If Pham goes, with the recruitment at the moment, you worry about whether they're going to replace him with somebody who's competent enough to put the ball in the net. And he's looked our best player as a sub. The only other player that scored since October at home is Chris Martin. We really struggle to score. Only 5 wins out of 11 this season. It's no fortress coming to Ashton Gate, COVID or no COVID. And as a side, it's all a bit of a mess on and off the pitch. We need to see some committed play on the pitch, and we need to see a settled formation and players who go out there are hungry, committed, and can put their foot in a tackle when they need to. Because right now, City look on and off the pitch a soft touch that are just cruising along, happy to stay in a championship and not worry about where we go. Compared with the rugby, we look a bad, you know, we're coming a very poor second, and nobody wants to hear that.
No, I think absolutely right. I mean, Dave, going back to contracts, I'll come to you all on contracts as well. I mean, we're in this COVID, you know, we're not going to be going back into Ashton Gate in a normal format, if even then, until August, if we're lucky. Right. And then all these players, if you're a player who's out of contract in the summer and currently you're on 10 grand a week and you're saying, oh, I'll get 15 grand a week, I think those days are gone, you know, because I think the finances in football have gone to rat shit. And this business of letting all these contracts run down, right? So we're not carrying. Do you think it's a deliberate ploy, even giving Holden just a rolling? It wasn't a 12-month contract. It was a rolling 12-month contract. So if they sacked him Monday, he'd be paid up until the 12th of January 2022. But do you think there is some method in this madness and this apparent madness and this general letting things trundle along? And I said many times on the podcast, this has been a free hit for the club and for Holden. And come the end of the season, you know, when maybe the finances are, you know, we've lost a few clubs or some clubs in a real dire strait. Do you think we're so subtle that we're actually ready to take advantage of it? And next season is the one where things will start to pick up. What do you think? Which is, again, linked to contracts.
Yeah, I honestly don't know, Dave. Is, you know, as I said before, what is the strategy? I think where you've got, you know, your likes of your Jack Hunt, your Andreas Vivian, I know he's got a year extension, your Patos, your Nathan Baker. Like, those guys in the COVID world that we're in, they're at the peak of their careers, if not starting to tail off the other side. In COVID world, I think they're currently going to be on the best money that they could get anywhere. They ain't going to go out and get a better contract than what they're on now. So maybe they're looking to see in the summer, you know, but then again, you'd think, well, could we not tie them down? Could we not say to Pato, who's had a, you know, a pretty decent season, could we not say, yeah, you're on, I don't know, let's say he's on 12, 14 grand a week now. Could we not say, actually, we'll give you 2 years at 10K because you ain't going to get better than what you're on now anywhere else? I don't know. I'd love to know what the strategy is.
But then if you take a player like Pattinson,
good first-team players, or, you know, players who play two-thirds of games in the first team, every season, out the door.
But equally, we say Pato is one of our better players at the moment. Are the clubs that financially more exposed than we are, that we know?
You're right there, Dave.
There are clubs in a financially worse situation than we are because they don't have somebody like, they don't have Steve Lansdowne's pockets. Let's put it like that. I won't say Steve Lansdowne.
But that becomes immaterial to some extent, Dave.
Because we could be looking at Patterson and thinking, look, do we spend,
give us the cash flow and cover our debts.
Yeah.
But you can't just lob money into it. And I think we're at the point, and I guess this was the point of the article I wrote, was over the last 3-4 years, we've always had, I guess, you know, the family silver to sell. And, you know, and either those were people brought in initially by O'Driscoll, then by Cottrell, and a little bit of Lee Johnson as well.
Yeah.
But other than our goalkeeper, we haven't got that 10 million player we can sell, or a couple of 10 million players we can sell each summer. I think we're actually, I wouldn't say we're in financial problems, but we're running up against the wire as well, I think.
Yeah, the point I was trying to get at there was that, okay, if Pato, I'm not talking about playing transfers, I'm talking about looking at a wage budget. So if you've got Patterson that's there on 12 grand a week, as you said, and you're offering 10, you know, if we've got a good recruitment strategy, we might be saying, do you know what, right, we've got 10 grand a week to spend on a player. Actually, we can get somebody better than Pato that's out of contract for 10 grand a week, who's at a club where he was on 12, but they've only offered him 8. Yeah, so, you know, and that could be various members of the Sheffield Wednesday. And I wouldn't want to touch Barry Bannon now because that ship has passed in terms of him being a value add. I mean, what do you think of that view, Ian, that, you know, this sort of letting the contracts run down, is it part of a greater scheme of things? And somebody said, somebody Beeler's put on here, holding his babysitting, and somebody else has said babysitting for who? I think that's taking it a step too far. But do you think we are waiting to capitalise on other players that will be out of contract that are better than Pato and Baker and others of that first team ilk as they are at the moment?
Well, the honest answer to that, Dave, is that we don't know.
We don't know.
And there's no information coming out of the club one way or the other. Now, Dean Holden has just said, Mark's talking to Famara and they ought to have something sorted out. But in fairness, he said that 6 months ago.
Yeah.
So, and it's not fair. I think Dave made the point earlier on, or I think you might have made it, where you said, you know, Dean Holden really doesn't want to get involved, doesn't get involved with contracts. And as a role as his head coach, he won't. I mean, obviously, he'll get a say on whether someone gets one or not. But he would always, it's this blowing in the wind thing that, I don't know, if someone made a decision and said, the other thing I would say is, let's say Fam tomorrow signs a contract and says he's going back to France. And let's say he goes, Marseille want him, let's say, and he goes back there and he signs a contract. Is he going to want to really put it all in for Bristol City from now to the end of the season with the risk of getting injured?
Well, no, just like the way I remember Adam Webster's last game in a Bristol City shirt when they played Palace at home and they dubbed us 5-0 in a pre-season friendly, you know, and you're going to not put that extra, you're not going to play that 100%. And like I think somebody said, the way Adelakin didn't face up to the shot today, you know, his mind, he knows he hasn't got a future at this club. So why are they going to bother? I mean, one thing I don't know, and one of you can maybe answer this, if he signs a pre-contract for another club, does he have to tell the club that that's what he's done, or can he just play dumb and it comes out by mistake, or whatever? Does he have to say?
No, I think it's an official document. You know, it'll come out. I mean, if it doesn't come out at City, it'll come out at the other end. The club have signed a pre-contract agreement, and you know, we'll be going there. I mean, I agree with everything you say on some of the other players. I mean, but if you look at it's these, you know, some of the signings. Okay, we signed Smodix, Moesa.
We got our money back. Players. We got our money back
for not. Well, we got more than our money back, so it's not a massive. That's not a massive issue. But when you're talking, if you add it all up, it adds up to over £15 million worth of talent just walking in June. If we're going to do that, we need an explanation of why we're going to do it. I mean, they may think we've got enough good young players coming through that we're going to be, we're going to have an all academy side with a few seasoned pros put in there. But who knows? They may say, well, we're not going to give Tommy Rowe a new contract because we've got Cameron Pring, we've got Jada Silva. Why do we want three left backs? So there could be explanations around it, but I'm not seeing, I don't know what the strategy is, and that makes me, when you've got the injury situation and you've got the contract situation, that just makes me a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah. I mean, Mark, Naki Wells, 5 million on him a year ago. He's 31 now, or he's 31 next birthday. That's another asset that's not going to, we're never going to get, you know, we bought him just before we entered COVID, but that's another 5 million going out through the door because we're never going to get more for him than what we paid, are we? And that's another strange one, isn't it?
It doesn't look like it, but I mean, I think Naki's a committed player and he can score goals and he can set them up. He's not played in his natural position, which I think is off a, you know, off a big man or a number 10, playing on his own up front. I don't think there's any chance that we're going to try and build a side around him. But I think he'll. I've heard stories that he's a bit unhappy, but I think that's just terrorist banter. But I think he'll just do the best of a bad job in terms of where he fits in, as long as he didn't play on the right side of midfield, because that was totally ludicrous today, because he just completely lost the guy. What's the point of playing him, you know, wide in a midfield four? But
that brings us back to tactics and organisation on the day.
Yeah, just a mess. You know? What tactics? Mess. What organisation? Didn't seem to be
playing 4-1-6 or something, or 4-1-5 or something like that. It's a mess. All right, look, we got a chance to talk about this again on Wednesday night after the Brentford game. I mean, let's have a few. Let's have a little bit of reflective thought. I'll come to you first, Dave. You're probably too young to remember Bobby Keller, aren't you? Yes, was he before your time? 68,
yeah,
69, just before your
is
time.
He the one with the big thighs, according to me, Dad.
He was, and he used to pump his cheeks. He used to pump his cheeks in and out when he was running. He was a little short player, and he was a little short, fat player. I last saw him at Ashton Gate in the old Williamstown about 7 or 8 years ago, and he's silver grey hair. That's the pictures of him up on the images on the, if you do a Google search, but good little player. But before your time, all right, so before your time on there, but I said in the, when I sent you all a text before the game today, any particular FA Cup third round memories for you, Dave, that you can think of? It's a bit difficult because we're not exactly a FA Cup type side, but any particular matches stick in your mind at all?
I hope it was a third round game, but Leicester City away, Jakanowski and Bent, that was what I went to. I never went a lot.
That was a fourth round, kind of, I think.
Fourth round, was it? In which case,
yeah, no, because we lost the Forest.
Save that one for next time.
All right. Move on to someone else.
I'll go on to someone else. I mean, Ian, thoughts of Bobby Kellard and FA Cup third round memories?
Yeah, Bobby Kellard scored. It's the first goal I can remember clearly from being at the City Ground. It was a night game. It was against Aston Villa. And I was at the open end. And Bobby Kellard scored with a left foot shot from 25 yards into the keeper's top left-hand corner at the East End. And I think we won the game 1-0.
Ian, it's funny you should pick that one, because again, I'll tell you which season it was. He was, Bobby Keller was with us for two seasons. He left us to join Leicester and then was captain, I think, when they got promoted. That match against Villa, I remember that, not that game, but I do remember that goal. I was just looking in David Wood's history of the club, and it describes it exactly as you did, as I remember it. A stunning shot, rising shot from the edge of the box. And it was, bizarrely, City's first home league win ever against Aston Villa. Yeah, but that's one of my memories.
Well, my memory of Bobby Kellard was another night game, and we had about 14,000 in there, and it was cold. And you think with 13,000 at the moment, you can hear all what the players are saying, and all the screams and the jumps and the God knows what, because there's no crowd in. There's 13,000 in there in the night. And the game wasn't going very well, and Mike Gibson was in goal, and Mike had the ball, and all of a sudden you heard this voice bark out from this little guy, "Gibbo, get the effing thing up here," and it was Bobby Kellard.
Yeah,
and you think that's one voice over a 13,000 crowd? That just goes to show you how quiet the ground was, but you heard him absolutely word perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he was a player. And FA Cup third round memories, Ian, at all? Any particular ones that stand out for you?
The sort of FA Cup games I remember, I mean, obviously, we remember, I don't know about third round, but the Liverpool away, the Liverpool game that got when the floodlights went out at Ashton Gate.
Of course, that was third round, wasn't it? Was that third round? Or four?
I think it might have been, Dave. Yeah, it's no good asking me about dates.
Yeah,
it was third round. With dates.
That was
But there, you know, games that stand out. I can remember a 4-4 draw against Wrexham. Was that a cup game?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Oh, we lost the replay.
Merrick's diving header into his own net. Do you remember that, Ian?
Yeah, I mean, there's been some good games down there over the years, some good cup games. If you want to go outside the FA Cup, you know, I've seen a couple of League Cup, three League Cup semi-finals.
Oh, well, we don't want to go down there. We don't want to talk.
Not that far down memory lane.
Not that far down. Mark, do you remember Bobby Kellard, or were you sitting short trousers?
He's not of my generation, but I interviewed him for a short piece for the Evening Post in January 2009 before the replay that we lost 2-0, and he told me his interesting story about when he signed, because he signed to replace Johnny Quigley.
That's it.
John went to Mansfield. And Bobby Kellard said to me, John Quigley was seen by Alan Dix, Kellard said, as a threat to his job, because he was a leader, and he thought that if he failed, that Dolman would get rid of him and bring Johnny Quigley in. So he got rid of him. So what made it worse, he said, was that Dix made me captain for my debut. He said, I knew it was wrong. Dix knew it was wrong. The crowd knew it was wrong. As soon as I led the team out for my debut, I got booed. But the other thing, interesting thing was, and of course this is in the history books by David Woods, is that Dolman bought his house on Hayling Island in Portsmouth to help facilitate the transfer, because he was very keen on him. So he brought Kellard to City. When Kellard left, I think it might have been to have to pay off the Dolman stand. I think Ian, David, you might remember that.
1970,
I think Chris Garland was the same. We needed the money. There was a big debt that we played on the Dolman stand. He went to Leicester City, and Kennard had a number of clubs. He went to Leicester and got them promoted into the first division in his first season. He told me that Franco Farrell was his manager, and Farrell had promised him a pay rise if they got promoted. So he went up to him at the end of the season. The club had got promoted. He said, "Where's my rise?" He said, "I'm off to Man United. Sort it out with the other manager." So he promptly left.
That's right, because he didn't stay at Leicester. That. He didn't. That's right.
No,
he
was at the Leicester Palace.
Only a very short period. In the August, like that.
He was an accomplished painter. I think
I had a football Charles Buchan's football annual, and there's a picture of him there. He used to paint watercolors, but there we go. I mean, it's interesting. Somebody on here has picked up one that I can remember, one of the few bright spots of our last season in what is now the Premiership. We played Derby in the third round at Ashton Gate and beat them 6-2 January 1980. And the one I remembered at the top of the show was, funnily enough, against last time we played Portsmouth in the FA Cup. Well, maybe not, 1973, and we were losing 1-0, and you're just as you are shuffling out the ground, and Bobby Gould was playing for us then, and he headed a last minute equaliser that got City a replay. But what I remember of that game is walking back to the coach and Portsmouth fans running down the road chasing after us and legging it, got back to the coach and the bloody door was locked to the coach, and Stan literally holding a copper with his big helmet on. He was about 6 foot wide and 7 foot tall, and just hiding behind him until we got back on the coach, and the idiots that stood by the coach, a couple of them, got a good kick in that day. But there we go. Guys, look, we've done over the hour again. Sorry to those listeners who think we're moaning minis, which is not many. We do it with a smile on our faces, really.
Hey, you know what we've forgotten, David?
What's that?
Who do we want in the next round?
Oh, shut up. We can discuss... We don't want to do any of that, bollocks. We do not need to do that, because that is, you know. But I have to say, we need to have...
David.
I was going to say something. I'm going to shut up. No, I was going to say something else, but I'm not going to say that. So we don't want to be controversial here. But look, guys, we've got it to look forward to on Wednesday, and we've got another one booked. Thank you to everybody that's listened, and I urge all of you that haven't read it, look at Dave's analysis. Apologies for those at the beginning when the quality of the sound wasn't great, but that's my fault, because it's been all right. The rest of it, Dave, hasn't it? Really? Yeah. He said, "You're still there, Dave."
I'm still here, Dave.
Yeah, I'm still here.
It's not too bad, but you're still here. You're all here. Any final thoughts, guys? Well, let's do a quick result prediction for Wednesday night at Brentford. Dave, any chance of anything?
On today's performance, no.
Yeah. Mark?
I'm going to gamble and then go for a straight one-all draw.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why not? Why not?
Ian, your thoughts, hopeful for Wednesday? Pull off a shot?
No, but I'd say with the players that Brentford have got out, because De Silva's out, Pontus Janssen is out, and they've got somebody else this half decent out. The best thing I could realistically hope for is a backs to the wall performance and a point.
Yeah.
But that's only if he selects the team he selected today. I don't think he will, but I actually think we'll get smashed.
Well, we hope not. We hope not. But
let's hope he doesn't. Like, you know, I've put a suggestion of the team that I'd pick on Twitter. And it, like I said earlier on, it might be nice to see one of the youngsters in, like a James Morton in midfield, who can act, who's left-sided and can pass the ball. So let's just see if we can. I think we need to be a lot more solid than we were today, and hopefully the forwards can score goals out of nothing.
Well, we hope so. Guys, thanks. Thanks a lot for that. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll speak to you or talk to you all on Wednesday. All the best. Cheers now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.